Yeah, I was a heavy drinker, but I didn't recognize what the people closest to me recognized. I ended up laying flatlined on a hospital operating table. Somehow the surgeons brought me back to life.
When your life depends on it, there's only one place you can turn. Karen. A recent independent study showed that 94% of Karen patients were still in recovery 90 days post-treatment. Visit caron.org/real. Karen. Real results. Real care. Real about recovery.
Introducing Under Armour's Infinity High Sports Bra. Its ergonomic design is molded to support the natural movement of your body. With cord-out padding, the better breathability eliminates extra bulk without sacrificing support. And quick-dry padding is Under Armour's fastest-drying padding yet. When you're lifting heavy, running fast, and pushing yourself further than ever before, you need a bra that will help you go that extra mile and make you feel your best. Shop the Infinity High Sports Bra now at UA.com.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Cannabis Hour. We are always keeping you guessing when we're going to post our show. We will never be on time, and we will certainly never have sound. And that is a guarantee, darn it. Javi, welcome, man. How's it going?
Pretty good. I mean, I would be frustrated with someone on the YouTube chat just left a note saying you stoners always screw up the sound. If only they knew how not stoned we are.
I know, man. Listen. We all want to be stoned, okay? But it is what it is. You know, we're going to get it right. You know, we're going to keep plugging away. We keep having awesome guests. You guys continue to keep watching us after the fact.
Why do people watch us?
Yeah, I mean, it's just pre-recorded, you know? But once we get it live, we'll get you in there. I do want to call out a few cool pieces of news. So really quickly, before we get Elad Barak on here, very excited for these three conversations today, by the way, I want to call out a very cool story. The OTCQX released their top 50 performing companies of 2020. Now, what that means is they calculated this based on equal weighting of one-year total return and average daily dollar volume growth over the last calendar year.
Mm-hmm.
So five cannabis companies made that list. How cool is that? Five cannabis companies. You had to lead them all.
Guess.
This is OTCQX. Give me some guesses.
Columbia Care?
They were the top one at number 14.
What else?
They are CCHWF.
TerrAscend.
TerrAscend was number two. At number 23, TRSSF.
That's, I can think of OTCQX, GTI.
GTI was number five.
Boom.
Yeah, okay. So GTIF. And they came in at number 48, so they just made it. The number three company, Planet 13 Holdings, at PLNHF. And this one, I think, is just, it's so cool what these guys have done. They built slowly. They built it the right way. Number four and number 41, Next Green Wave. That is NXGWF. So honestly, props to those five companies. They are doing it correctly. They are building it correctly. I expect a huge year from a couple of these guys in the consolidation factor. We already seen some, but outside of that, you know, these are the companies that I think are worth a watch. Anyways, Javi, I haven't even asked. How are you doing today, man?
Pretty good, man. Excited. Today we saw also Agrify go public on the NASDAQ. Is planning to raise about 54 million, actually.
Yeah.
Gage closed on a 50 million Reg A plus funding round. Air Strategies also acquired Blue Camel for 75 million. So it's been a very interesting week for financings and M&A. And hopefully we'll see some more tomorrow.
Y'all, the money is still rolling. We are still rolling in the dough.
Money is back.
Yes, it's back. That is a great way to put it, Javi. The money is back. Honestly, though, not to take away from the guests that we have on the show today, we have three companies that are presenting different, I think, perspectives of the topic of dosing, right? Mm-hmm. So this show is really discussing dosing. We're going to be covering that in the cannabis sense a couple times, and we're going to be covering it in a different point of view with a psychedelics company. Very excited about this. You know, do you want to add anything to the to that, Javi, before we
I just want to add right now, man. I want to hear all about Moisture. That's my jam.
Ooh, I like this. Javi's ready to put it to a lad. Let's bring him over. Beautiful. So Elad is the CEO and co-founder or founder of Voyager. This is voyagerproducts.ca. Elad, how are you, sir?
Good, thanks. How are you guys?
Good, man. We are just going with the flow. It's what we do over here at Benzinga.
That's my intro, and I hope we can show some people that it's not about being stoners.
Hey, honestly, we are...
I'm wearing a shirt. I mean... Come on. Let me ask you one thing. Is that name Israeli? Elad Barak. Yeah, it sounds very Israeli.
Yeah, originally. But we're a Canadian company, and I've been living in Toronto for the past 7 years.
Seven years. Fantastic.
How do you like it?
Are you an OG in the space?
No, I've been in the cannabis industry for 3 years. But, you know.
What'd you do before that? How'd you make your way to a company that provides dosing products in the cannabis industry? Yeah,
it's kind of a you know, it's a weird story, but I'm originally from Israel, and I kind of did the regular path there, military service, was an officer in the military. And then I kind of like got myself into the aerospace industry in Israel, which is a big passion of mine. I worked there for five years.
You always loved being high. That's a
thing. Yeah, absolutely. And I actually worked on satellites that are 36,000 kilometers high, so probably as high as you can get from equipment perspective. So I've done that for a while, worked in robotics, and then moved to Canada, did my MBA. And a few years ago, I was always using cannabis both recreationally and medically, but I became kind of like an official medical consumer. And that opened my eyes to the cannabis industry. I really wanted to join and be part of it. But for me, it was very important to merge two passions, which is not only cannabis, it's also technology. So I was looking how I can do something that involves both of them. And that's kind of what led me to, in the end of the day, to have Voyager.
Fantastic. So your company, now did it always start off as a company for dosing and vaping mechanisms? Or not dosing.
No, just dosing, not vaping. Actually, we're staying away from smoking and vaping. But no, we started as a cannabis beverage. We felt that we have a better approach on how to do it from an operations perspective. Mm-hmm. And my partner and I, while we were working on this, we had this aha moment where we understood that the real game is to allow consumers to add cannabis to anything they want, whether it's a beverage or just sublingually, and to allow them to do it in a very accurate way so they can choose their own dose and they know what they're getting. And that's kind of like we pivoted. We saw that something is missing there, right? You have all kinds of solutions that are, you know, we can argue how accurate or how good they are in dosing. Even if they exist, they're not that simple, right? So that's kind of what we pivoted to. But I'll just mention that it was very important for us to say like, okay, it's not enough to just develop this product. We wanted to make sure that we have a very good offering for the potential consumers and cannabis users. And we're building an ecosystem. We're allowing other partners to use our technology. And, you know, take this also everywhere, not only in Canada, because we don't touch the plant and we're very scalable. So we're definitely planning on taking this to consumers in the States and Europe and everywhere.
Interesting.
So wait, can we really explain how the product works exactly? Because it's pretty unique, right? There's a lot of vapes, right? There's a million brands for cannabis flower. But what is liquid cannabis? How does it work? And what's the little machine that you use?
yeah, absolutely. So I'd say, if it's okay, I'll just kind of mention what dosing is for us, because I think that's not that straightforward. Please. And then maybe jump into that just to kind of make more sense to the listeners. And I think that when we mention dosing, a lot of people will kind of tell, yes, I know what you're talking about. But when you start talking with different consumers or companies, you see that everybody approaches it differently. Some will tell you that dosing for them is customization, right? Allowing them to say, I want to take 1 milligram today or 5 or 10. But then, you know, I read a press release of a company today that's taking out an edible. And one of their highlights is that it's very dosable because it's precise. It's exactly 5 milligrams. If you take the full gummy, you're getting 5 milligrams. So while some say dosing is customizable, some say dosing is actually giving you an accurate, precise dose. And we obviously think it's both of them together, but we have two more layers that we add in it. One is a direct successor of the precision, which is the repeatability. So if I know that my product is accurate and every time that I want to get, for example, 4 milligrams, I'm getting 4 milligrams, I can predict my next cannabis experience. And then last but not least, we believe everything needs. If the product isn't simple, if it isn't convenient, then none of us will use it. So that's kind of the thing that guide us. And with that, I'm happy to show more of a product and how it works. But as we mentioned, it's not vaping or smoking at all. It's actually for cannabis concentrates. And to that matter, it's for any concentrate. So even the third company today that's going to talk about psychedelics, if they want to dispense a liquid, we can do that with them. And the way it works is very simple. You need to buy one time a dispenser, and then you have to buy pods of particular concentrate, whether it's a cannabis concentrate as we're talking or anything else. And what we've done is we developed really unique pods. It's kind of a sophisticated bottle. It has an integrated dispensing mechanism. And once you connect the pod and the dispenser together, we can operate it and now dispense liquid very accurately. If you want to get 1 milligram, 5, 10, whatever you decide, we can give that to you. Very accurate.
Mm-hmm. What are the standards you're using for those that might put their product into your machine, if that makes sense? So the partners you're with, are you holding them to certain standards, or are you asking them to meet any testing qualifications?
Yeah, that's a great question, because very kind of important to mention is that Voyager manufactures the hardware, right? We're developing it, but we don't touch the plant. So we sell this pods empty to the different cannabis companies. They fill it and then sell it. Very similar to what you see with a lot of vaping products, right? The companies, they buy the vaping equipment, fill it, and then sell it. Now, when you manage an ecosystem, kind of like what PAX or Dosist is doing compared to 510, you want to maintain some kind of quality assurance that your consumers know and are happy with. So that's something we're actually working with our first partners. We want to have a voice on the table for that. And we know it's very important for them. As somebody told us, they want to make sure that nobody buys a pod that gives a bad experience, right? Because that will harm the full ecosystem. So in order to address that, we're making a panel together.
This is a young baby CPG company, is what it sounds like to me.
Absolutely.
I'm curious, you mentioned one of the things, you have 4 milligrams and you can predict your experience. How does tolerance play into all of this, right? Into the predictability of the experience and adjusting it?
Yeah, I mean, we have to remember that in the end of the day, every one of the cannabis consumers, and we hear a lot of CEOs speak about it, are very different. And that's why, if a cannabis beverage company talks about sessionability, I can't drink with my friends the same bottle of cannabis because for tolerance reasons, I'm not going to get as high because I use probably more cannabis. Mm-hmm. That's where the customizable goes into place. But, Javier, if you're using my product for the first time and you've never used cannabis, you'll have to try out something first to learn. I think the advantage with Voyager is that you can decide you're starting with 1 milligram. And if you're good with that, tomorrow you can go to 2 and 3, and you can decide your pace. It's not like, let's try something, see how I feel, and do some test work. It's very accurate, and you can actually monitor everything through our app and get some guidance from there as well.
Do you have multiple delivery mechanisms? It seems like you were saying sublingual, you were saying the cannabis beverage dispenser. I'm curious about some of your other lines.
Yeah, it's one dispenser. The beauty is that it can work with the different concentrates. In cannabis, we see two direct use cases. One is the regular cannabis oil that we all know and are familiar with. Most people will put it sublingually. But again, if they do it with a syringe or with a dropper, they're not going to reach the same levels of dosing and accuracy. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, there's these new products, which we're seeing here in Canada, and I'm assuming also in the States, which is cannabis that has already been emulsified, but still comes as a concentrate. And there you're just, you know, you're invited to take it and add it to your own beverage and mix your own beverage, right? And we've seen researches that show that that's, you know, one of the biggest preferences of consumers. We know that Ripple is doing great in Colorado. But again, if you buy a Ripple bag or something to add to your beverage and it's exactly 10 milligrams, you don't have that dosing aspect. So we want to allow you to do that and take it with you anywhere.
Interesting.
Great. So what's next for you guys? What does 2021 look like for Voyager? And yeah, maybe a little insight on maybe what the past few months have looked like leading into that.
Yeah, I think we like to say that we follow a lot of milestones. The last year with COVID, we set a few really strong milestones that we achieved and very happy with. First of all, we got our first working prototype. We've tested in a lab, we got great results. We have less than 3% error. So when I'm giving you a dose, I know that you're getting exactly what I'm saying. But not only that, we've secured co-packing agreements here in Canada. We've also submitted our patents, so we're patent pending. And I can even mention that 2 weeks ago, we got our first review from the CPT, so that's the international filing. And we've only been challenged in 2 claims out of almost 30. So that's very encouraging, and we see the patent moving well. We've Great. Also submitted to Health Canada, what's called NNCP. So that's essentially approving our product to be sold in Canada. We've completed that process, no feedback, so that's a good thing. And essentially that means that we're allowed to go and start selling it in Canada. We need to start talking with different boards. In addition, we closed our first partnership with an event company, and we're getting set, we signed a deal to do a test, sensory testing with a leading licensed producer here in Canada. So we're getting ready for that. And with that, I'll kind of tie to the next steps. For us at Voyager right now, we're really focused on that sensory testing. So we're working to go into a facility, a cannabis facility, where we can test this, bring a bunch of consumers, let them enjoy the product. We're having it manufactured as we're speaking in food grade ingredients, so we can put cannabis inside it. And that's, I would say, the most exciting thing. And then afterwards, we're going to launch it probably later this year in the market, in the Canadian market. And obviously, for all of that, we are fundraising this year. So we're starting to talk with investors and move that ahead as well.
That's great. So is there a place where they can find more information on your raise? Or do you have any specifics you'd like to pass now? Or maybe just kind of a stay tuned?
I mean, definitely our website has information about what we're doing and a bit of information for investors. I think the best way to really get an insight in what we're doing, which is a full pitch deck, and if you really want to dive in to see some financials and more information, is just contacting us directly. Again, either through the website, through LinkedIn, or just emailing me. It's Elad@VoyagerProductsCA, and we're happy to share more.
That's awesome. Javi, do you have any other questions for Elad? I know there's so much to cover in one company in 15 minutes, but I've been hogging it.
I find all of the technology so interesting, right? So we don't have a lot of time left, but I really want to understand how you came up with this technology, or how, like, where the idea came from. What made you think, you know, the way to go is this machine, right? Like, this is what people will need and want.
Yeah, I think, and you know, I'm going to tie it to something that we hear sometimes is, how do you know that people want this? And I think that there's
a lot of... That's kind of my question. There's a learning curve for a product like this. I've been, you know, in the cannabis industry for like 7 years, and I hadn't seen anything like that, right?
So, and sometimes we get asked is, do you think we need it because we haven't seen it before? And I think that's a way to kind of ignore a real need. I even heard a CEO of a pharmaceutical company said, is it needed? And I'm like, look, everything we do is dosed. So I think the fact that we don't have a good solution doesn't mean there's not a real need. But we kind of went above and beyond to kind of look for those proof points, right? So first of all, we have partners that we're talking with here in Canada that are very excited, both on the medical and recreational side, looking to join and buy the empty pods from us so they can put it on the market. So that's the first good sign. But we also went and did a research, market research with a company called Dig. very respectable in the CPG world, but as well in the cannabis world. They've been working in it for a while now, and the results were great. There's a big barrier for consumers to enter cannabis, mainly due to the control issue that they don't know what they're consuming. And that's a place that our product really went well with their wants and needs. Obviously, a lot of consumers don't want to smoke or vape, and we're one of many that follow that. And I would say the interesting part for us was we found that the what's called heavy users, the ones that consume on a daily or weekly basis, they get our product like this. Not only like they get it, they're willing to pay money to purchase it at even higher price. So we were really surprised about the fact that the heavy users are probably more than willing to switch into a Voyager product.
Huh? That's interesting.
That's really interesting. Well, awesome. Elad, I think we need to wrap this up, unfortunately, but can they reach out to you with any questions if they're interested in maybe having a touch, maybe a small discussion on the financing?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We're very approachable. Again, LinkedIn, email, elad@voyagerproducts.ca, and happy to share more.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for being here, my friend. We look forward. Are you going to be joining us February 25th? Is that correct?
Absolutely. We're joining the event. And you know, I haven't said it because we started right away, but Benzinga has been awesome for us all the time. We've been in the events for the last 2 years in your events and always enjoy it, always learn something and always learn great people, meet, you know, great people. So
appreciate those kind words. Yeah. Thank you so much for that, Elad. We appreciate that. And we're happy to have you. And we look forward to hearing from you again in less than a month. But we will talk to you then, my friend. Be well.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Awesome. That was a super interesting start to the discussion, I think, Javi, on dosing.
One of those.
I really want to. and like beverages are exploding. Like the beverage industry is exploding. I mean, we saw that with our CANN discussion 2-3 weeks ago. Yep. Time flies, people. I don't know. Awesome. But let's keep moving. You know, people don't want to hear from me. They want to hear from our guests. So next up is the Chief Science Officer of Mitacin, Rob Roscoe. I always say, I hope I said that right. But I don't know if I can screw that one up. Rob, please don't tell me I screwed your name up.
Oh, no, that was perfect.
Come on.
Thank you.
Awesome.
That one you can get.
Yeah, I know, right? Rob, how are you, sir?
Good. It's great to be here. I'm really excited to talk to you guys today, especially about dosing. I think it's going to be really relevant in the psychedelic space.
That's great. I mean, did the last guest act, you know, maybe interest you in using some of his products for any psychedelic products you have?
I think the value points he was just talking about, you know, are absolutely applicable in the psychedelic space and in kind of a nuanced different way. I mean, he was really nicely highlighting how better dosability makes cannabis products more compatible to the recreational consumer. And this is something that at Mitacin, we see that same theme applying to the psychedelics, but not necessarily for recreational use, but actually for making them more compatible with therapy practice. You know, the really solid clinical data that's coming out for depression relief, post-traumatic stress disorder, addiction, these sorts of, you know, really serious medical conditions. We think that the same aspects or similar aspects of dosability will help that become more usable in the therapist's hands and really make a headway in those conditions. So
I'm so interested to see where psychedelics go. So Javi, I'm gonna let you ask the next question, but yeah, I just wanted to
let's
say-
let's rewind like, just for so a bit. Cool. I mean, tell us about Mitacin. What do you do? You're a relatively new company. You went public. You're doing super interesting trials. You know, I have some friends who work with the company and they tell me a lot about what you do, but you know, do share because it's
absolutely. So yeah, we're a company that's about a year old now. And so we really started the company to take hold of the new potential that's really been highlighted with psychedelics, like the clinical research that I was just mentioning. You know, this is really a promising area to treat undermet conditions. And then if you look at fungi as a whole, they're very, very good producers of medically interesting compounds. So if you kind of take those two things, that was really a lot of the, you know, the interest and impetus behind starting the company is seeing that potential. And so now kind of, you know, fast forward almost a year. And like Javier was mentioning, we've really, you know, been able to itemize out a pathway for clinical trials to look at this in really, you know, a serious fashion and see how do these substances apply to the treatment of PTSD? How do they apply to, you know, other serious mental health conditions? And how can we effectively make them most compatible for that use. You know, right now we're seeing this really strong potential effectively of products of nature, and they haven't been looked at in the same way with a similar, you know, pharmaceutical lens has been applied in other areas of medicine. And so this is something that's really, really strong potential. And, you know, I think was highlighted by your last guest and how it applies into the cannabis space and recreational products, but it's a very, you know, large area to research that has a huge amount of potential.
Yeah, I want to follow up on that specifically, the R&D side. Mm-hmm. It seems to me we're so early on, right, in the psychedelic space, but it's also moving at an incredible rate. So, you know, like whether you grow 100 years in the next year or it takes 5 years, who knows? But I'm curious, you know, where are we exactly in the dosing aspect specifically of psychedelics? Are we in the infantile stages, or are we close to having some actual data?
Definitely. So I think we're really asking the pointed questions right now of what is the best dosage for the conditions. You know, the really promising research that's already out there is with large, often, you know, referred to as macro doses. And this is great for highlighting the potential medical benefit here, but they haven't been taken to the next level, really to a great degree of asking, okay, well, if we see this big benefit with a macro dose, how much can we lower that and possibly, you know, lower side effects to patients, make the effect more controllable in a therapy setting? So those questions are being actively asked right now. And you kind of see the opposite side of this coin as well, with a really strong interest in microdosing. And so there's, you know, big, you know, public perception, public interest in this, you know, wellness benefits around microdosing. And so this is something that as a company, we're also looking at. We're actively sponsoring international research that is really looking at, you know, if people are self-reporting a big benefit with microdosing, what's the actual signal there? You know, what underlying conditions might they actually be treating? And how do we take this, you know, really interesting public perception, growing public interest, and then work that into a, you know, more medical solution, you know, possibly for addressing underlying anxiety or these sorts of, you know, maybe undermet conditions in those patients. Mm-hmm.
I feel like there's been more of a consciousness around mm-hmm. dosing in the psychedelics world versus the cannabis world for a longer time. I don't know if you feel the same, but I, as you say, you know, this has been a topic of public discussion, you know, microdosing in Silicon Valley, right? And that kind of trickled down to cannabis, and people started talking about microdosing cannabis. Do you see the same? And if so, why? Where do you think this came from? And you know, this attention to dosing in psychedelics, is it because the trip is harsher, right? Because not correctly dosing LSD or something is a super intense trip. And if you don't properly dose cannabis, well, maybe you're a little bit too high and you go to sleep.
I don't know. I think that last aspect is a large factor. I mean, this is something that there's, you know, a massive dose escalation effect where you get, you know, very serious, you know, effects as far as people's perception of reality, perceptions of time, et cetera. And so it's very, you know, discernible to the users. You also see this kind of in when you talk to researchers, it actually makes it hard to blind subjects because they understand when they're taking these substances, it's hard to make a placebo in that context. So I think initially that was where a lot of the interest in, you know, these different levels of dosing with psychedelics come in, because they're just easier for the general user to understand these sort of different tiered levels. But beyond that, if you look at it in a, you know, a drug design sort of fashion, these are, you know, compounds that are interacting at the same receptors as a lot of our antidepressants and anti-anxiety drugs. You know, they're an overlapping set of details there. And so I think also that's a factor, is that, you know, the idea of being able to use those in the same aspect for, you know, anti-depression, these sorts of things, you don't necessarily need the full-blown hallucinatory effect to see those benefits. And so it's the combination of those two, you know, really, you know, good awareness of dosage plus then the practical use of lower doses.
There might not be an answer for this yet, but to kind of piggyback off that, compared to cannabis, probably your least favorite phrase on the planet, I'm assuming. if 5 milligrams is good for me, 2 or 3 milligrams is good for my fiance. Is it that much, is it that variant, that type of a discrepancy on the psychedelic side as well, where it's like you experiment, you find the right dosage, or is it a little bit more like Javi and I could take the same dosage and my fiance and her cousin Jessica could take the same dosage? I'm curious, like what maybe how that might work on the psychedelic side of things.
Definitely. So it's still, like you're saying, a recent research question that's open, but it does seem like there is differences in how people actually build up tolerances with psychedelics compared to cannabis, where the tolerance is much more rapidly built with repeated usage and then goes away much more rapidly as well. And so because of that time course difference, it's kind of thought of in a different way. So I guess the best way that I would kind of characterize that.
Great. Or does that time look like, right? In actual days or weeks or whatever?
Yeah, so a lot of the treatment courses are really only a single dosage or doses spread out over a long period of time. And the reason for that is that you're inherently then getting rid of any sort of tolerance effect. You know, if you have weeks in between doses in a therapy context, you're not worried about needing to, you know, provide twice as much or three times as much if you're dosing on a daily basis. But it really, this highlights too, you know, the fact that macrodosing to see the effect in these populations does not at all at this point get to what's the best time course of treatment for the same patients. We know that the potential is there, but there's likely a much more optimal dosage level and then time course to match the potential of these drugs to enhance therapy and then really match it with the actual course of therapy. You know, that work is still completely ongoing, and it's something that we're actually, you know, targeting with our PTSD work, is iteratively looking at that across multiple patient groups in multiple locations.
So being that we are an investor-focused channel and show, I think it's poignant for our viewers to understand, a little bit about the direction of 2021 and beyond for Midas. Yes. And maybe on a financial, I know you all just put out a press release, was it yesterday, that there's a cool potential uplisting in the future, or an application for it at least. Yep. So do you want to dive into that for us?
Definitely. No, that's really exciting. And that's something that, you know, as a company, we're really excited to be able to possibly uplist our stock, because it really kind of paints us in a much more respectable light and really shows the level of detail and, you know, kind of a robustness to the foundation that I think we've been building the company with. And so this is something that, you know, it's been an ongoing effort, and we're really, you know, proud of that potential. And I think it will serve to really kind of compare our company in the correct light. And if I think about, you know, our business opportunity moving out over the next, you know, year and beyond, really the company is a biopharma, you know, focused company. And, you know, we're talking about the interesting compounds out of fungi, which is completely where we're focused. But how we, you know, secure this value moving into the future is very much intellectual property based, and is similar very much to a lot of biotech type work. And so that's where we feel like that's going to give us the best venue to be correctly compared in an investor context.
You were also included this week in the new psychedelics ETF by Horizon.
Yep.
Want to tell us about it? I don't know. Are you excited? Are you happy? What kind of impact has it had on the stock? What kind of impact do you expect on the stock?
Oh, he's depressed about it, Javi. Come on.
again, teeing him up. Come on, you know that.
No, we're really excited about this as well. And I think, you know, like I was saying with the, you know, possibility of uplisting to the NASDAQ, our goal is to really, you know, be able to compare the company and provide the company to, you know, the visibility to investors where it allows them to compare across the industry. And it's an area where we feel there's just a large amount of work to be done. And so we're really, you know, flattered and proud to be part of that group. And, you know, I think it's a strong group of companies that are really making headway in this space. You know, it's a large pie to be all looking at, you know, doing research in. And so it's something that we're really happy to, you know, both collaborate when we can, but also in this case to be included in the ETF there.
So kind of an interesting follow-up question. You know, I see celebrity influencing maybe being a little bit less poignant in the psychedelic space generally because it's more medicinally focused. But, you know, even so, you know, you have the name Kevin O'Leary, you know, behind MindMed. Are other big investors, big personalities, even, you know, those who maybe have experienced addiction or PTSD going to be valuable, you know, to the space or even to Midas moving forward?
I think absolutely. Ambassadors that have personal experience are going to be very important to the general industry and, you know, Midas as part of that. But the real importance that I see is that this category of drugs has seen such negative press over the last few decades. And that's really, you know, changing with the new research that's being brought to bear, but that's not necessarily immediately obvious to the non-scientific consumer. And so I view a lot of those influencers, role models, if they can really provide their personal experience and then get that across to the, the general public, I think that'll be very instrumental in changing that public perception and allowing people to, you know, decide, you know, is this something that they would be interested in for their own health and, you know, trust that it would be helpful for them.
As a quick follow-up, I mean, is that something you all would consider in the future, kind of searching out for that type of partner? Or is that maybe a little further down the road for somebody, for a company like Midasyn?
I mean, if it is a little bit down the road, but as a company, we are always, you know, looking to do anything that moves that, what I was just, you know, talking about with this public perception, that moves that into a more positive light, because this is something where we see that's just really holding back the research. You know, there's no real benefit to having this negative perception if we're looking at this in a completely, you know, medical and pharmaceutical type focus, you know, possibly relevant if you're talking about recreational use and risks there, et cetera. But, you know, in a medical focus, you know, we're looking to actively, you know, remove that stigma and really paint the picture that this is a you know, a trustworthy therapy when it's, you know, applied correctly with therapists.
Super interesting. I'm going to take the last question and we got to wrap it up after that. But there's this big debate in the psychedelic space, and it's, you know, synthetic versus natural, right?
Yep.
Which one are you? Why do you think it's better? And how does that tie into dosing and the ability to dose better or, you know, more easily or not?
Absolutely. So it's an interesting question, because if you look at the individual molecules, it doesn't really matter if they're, you know, a natural product versus a synthetic one, if they're actually, you know, fully, you know, just that one compound. But then there's a lot of nuance with that, where people are, you know, the historical use of especially psychedelic mushrooms is in their natural form, where you're not only just looking at psilocybin and psilocin, there's other minor components in there that are adding to the effect and likely creating an entourage effect very similar to cannabis. And so as a company, this is something that is complex to research, but we're very interested in kind of, you know, logistically stepping into this complexity of where does the value lie in the naturalistic form, because there's really interesting hints from traditional use that different species of mushrooms have vastly different effects. And at the moment, science considers these as, you know, completely interchangeable, the same exact effect just based on psilocybin content. And so this is something that, you know, we're interested in understanding these details. And then from that point, seeing if there's, you know, medical benefit of you know, leveraging those. So it's something that's a very interesting area and something that we're looking at.
Indeed.
That's awesome. So really quickly, CSC, MYCO, OTC, MYCOF, can they reach out to you? Where can they go to learn more about Midasyn?
Absolutely. So we're really approachable at Midasyn. You know, all of our C-suite is on LinkedIn. We're really approachable and accessible on LinkedIn if you look for the company and then look for us under there. Also, our website is a great way to reach out, and we have a contact link on there. And so, I mean, definitely people that are interested in the space, the research that we're doing, you know, more than, you know, extend the invitation to reach out.
Beautiful. Awesome. Thank you so much for being with us. Rob Roscoe, Chief Science Officer at Midasyn. That is MYDECINE. Thank you again so much and be well.
Thank you.
Great. Javi, two completely, completely different guests.
Oh, dog is making an appearance.
she agrees. Lord. I think she's really excited though for our last guest. I think this is what this is. Minnie made an appearance, but honestly, I'm super excited for our last guest. I have been in this industry for maybe 2.5 years, maybe a month in. I heard about Mara Gordon.
I mean, she's an idol. To me, one of my favorite people on earth. Super excited to have her.
Well, please introduce her. Well, we'll get her camera and mic turned on, but Javi, I'll let you take the reins.
I want her to tell her story. I mean, it's fascinating. It's been portrayed in documentaries and in countless articles and in a million interviews, but it never gets boring to me. It's one of these histories, if passion and real advocacy and commitment to the movement and to the people. So
find somebody that talks about you the way Javi talks about Mara. Mara, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here. I was listening to the other guests and I was like, oh, I have a comment on that. Oh, I have a comment on that. I have an opinion on that because I have an opinion on everything.
Perfect. I can't wait to hear them. Well,
bring them on.
Yes, but we first, I think our guests deserve to know a little bit about your background and how we got to now.
Okay. All right. So I am, by training, I'm a process engineer. So very much about looking for patterns and repeatability and consistency. That's my wheelhouse in no matter what industry and no matter how I live my life, I do that the same way. When I first, you know, in a very small nutshell, when I first was introduced to cannabis, my first questions were, how do you dose it? And back in those days, there wasn't even any lab testing. Yeah. So it was just a joke. And so I thought, I saw the benefits of it for myself. And I was like, I got to figure this out because there's a lot of people out there that are like me that are not naturally, you know, cannabis wasn't part of my world. In fact, I didn't even know the word cannabis. I knew marijuana, but I didn't even know cannabis that could be helped by this and should be helped by it. And it should be an option for them. And so I decided I was going to be the one to figure out how to do it. You know, because I had already done, you know, I had a background where I'd done a lot of very large scale, complicated software designs using artificial intelligence and machine learning and things over the years, I figured I would apply that same methodology to solving the cannabis dosing conundrum. And I initially wasn't really looking at this as serious. I was kind of looking at my demographic, more of the baby boomers and helping with some of the, you know, opioid reduction, you know, alternatives for some of the terrible drugs out there. But then very, very shortly after I got started, the first cancer patient came to us. And it was a six-year-old little girl with a brain tumor. She had glioblastoma multiforme, and her parents were just like, you know, begging us to see if we could help. Mm-hmm. And that's what started me on this then journey down through cancer and pediatric cancer in particular, and collecting all the data around the usage on that. Of course, I had to create a bunch of companies to support to solve this problem, because can't do it in a vacuum. You can't go to a dispensary and buy a brownie and then figure out how to dose it. You have to know what the brownie has in it first, right?
Right.
So I started Aunt Zelda's, actually making the products so that I started lab testing in, I guess it was like April 2011. And so being able to like have quasi-accurate, as accurate as testing is, information, and then validating on usage against diseases and about 300 data points, I've been able to do a pretty good job of predicting what's going to work and what the therapeutic levels are going to be for patients. How's that, Javi?
Wow. That's fantastic. I mean, and you kind of walk us into the first question in terms of, you know, I'm a newbie. What's dosing? How do I dose, right?
Right. So the first, that's a question that I'm asked quite frequently. The first thing I usually do with patients is start them out learning how to read a label, because that seems like, you know, it would be the most obvious thing in the world, but it takes me sometimes 3 and 4 back and forth with people before I get them to understand that when I want to know milligrams and not milliliters, and I want to know, you know, things like that. Mm-hmm. And so I don't need to know what's in the jar, or in the bottle. I need to know what's in the milligram, you know, of volume. So anyway, so what I would tell people always is, when you're talking about dosing, it's how much you take and how frequently you take it. That's the basic for what a therapeutic dose. If you have a pharmaceutical that you take from your doctor, or even if you go and over the counter buy a bottle of Tylenol, it's going to say on there, take 2 every 12 hours. That's the dose, right? With a lot of the more contemporary cannabis products that are coming pre-dosed in capsules and, mm-hmm. And sublingual troches and things like that, it's easy because you can say, take one, which is what people are more comfortable with in a lot of cases. But when you're using the tinctures, where I personally prefer like an infused olive oil or something so that we can titrate somebody very carefully to get them to their therapeutic dose. And the therapeutic dose is the amount it takes to achieve what your objective is with the medicine, all right? Anything more or less is just, you know, random. But mm-hmm. if I have a headache and I want to take enough cannabis to get rid of my headache, I don't want to get high. I just want to get my headache to go away. So it's about understanding what you're trying to accomplish with it when you select the starting dose. I always tell people to start much, much lower than they think they're going to need. I mean, I've started people on a third or a half of a milligram just to desensitize, especially people that are cannabis naive. Oftentimes, the very first time they use it, they don't even feel it. And they go, oh, well, that was nothing, so I'll take more next time. Well, it's really just your endocannabinoid system has never been activated by a plant medicine. So it's going to take a little first time, you know.
Yeah, I learned that my senior year of college sitting around a campfire. No. So Mara, is there a third aspect to this, you know, in terms of how the, you know, you just touched on it a little bit on how the cannabis is ingested or taken, the effectiveness, you know, versus what you're trying to, I don't want to say heal, but to, you know, yes, thank you. You know, isn't it better to have the onset quicker, or does that matter as much in terms of the effectiveness of it?
You know, that's an interesting question. And I would say the answer is yes and no. And the reason I say that is oftentimes cannabis medicine is used in conjunction with another cannabis medicine. If I have some, let's say, for example, and I'm just going to use that same person with the headache, okay? Uh-huh. They have a horrible, miserable headache. They're suffering. They don't want to take something that's going to take 2 hours to take effect.
Oh, no. So
they can take something that has a rapid onset, right?
Right.
And at the same time, go ahead and take the longer acting one, because the flip side to the rapid onset is it also rapidly goes away. Mm-hmm. So you have a much shorter, where you might use a sublingual that lasts 6 or 8 hours, and a rapid onset might last an hour and a half.
Gotcha.
I mean, I think that if I have somebody who forgot to take their sleep medicine and they don't want to be up till 2 a.m. waiting, they can use something that's rapid onset now and then take the other, and it'll keep them asleep through the night.
How do you dose that? I mean, how do you make that calculation? I know, for instance, again, like let's say Elliot needs 5 milligrams. What do I do, like 2 for rapid onset and 3 more, 4 more, like,
well,
how does that even work?
Right. Well, the reality is the rapid onset is likely to be gone by the time the other one takes effect. So if it's, there's not going to really be any overlap per se, even more so on the CBD. CBD goes away even faster than the THC.
You beat me to it, Mara.
Yeah. So I mean, it really, if 5 milligrams is your dose, you can use a 5 milligram rapid onset. You know, an hour and a half later, it's going to have already, you know, you've already going to peaked and gone down. Well, you're going to peak almost right away and be going down while the other one is just starting to take effect. Well, the first time you do it, you shouldn't do that, though. See mm-hmm. how it is for you. Everybody needs to do, you know, the same way if you color your hair, they tell you to do a patch test, make sure you're not allergic, you know, or something like that. People should use common sense, even though common sense is not very common, and, you know, and test it out first, you know, just to make sure that that's the case for them. I'm not a huge fan of the rapid onset, except in very specific conditions.
Can I piggyback off that? And I'm not a non-believer in CBD products. I think I just need a little bit more education. So specifically referring to dosing, can you tell me about, you know, is there a CBD product or type of CBD product that you find more effective in these situations? But I can't imagine all CBD products right now are created equal. So maybe how a consumer figures that out for themselves outside of just experimenting on all 20,000 CBD products there are available.
My heart breaks for the way that CBD has been introduced in this country and around the world. I feel like it was a conspiracy by the few to get rich, because the reality is, I believe that CBD that's used as medicine is just another cannabinoid within the plant that should be regulated and controlled as far as a full spectrum, so that you have the entourage. And I mean the real meaning of full spectrum, not this modern marketing version where, oh yeah, we put a few terpenes in there and we call it full spectrum. I don't mean that. I mean, the cannabis plant was fine just the way it was. It became a legal issue to make a lot of people a lot of money to have hemp separated out with the CBD. I think that hemp has a tremendous opportunity to do fantastic things for this world. But the CBD should still be regulated as a medicine, not about the regulation part, but of the safety for consumers. Because you're right, I've been heartbroken by patients that have come to me and they'll pull a jar out or a bottle out of their pocket and they'll show me what they're taking. And I'll look at it and it's like, we can have it independently lab tested, but I doubt there's any CBD in here. Or if it says 50 milligrams, it's probably 5 milligrams or whatever. And because yeah, a lot of times it's the isolate, and it's not, there's no other compounds within it to make it have a better effect for them. I'm just not a big fan at all. I believe that cannabis products include CBD products. So, you know, how do they know what good ones out there? You wanna get something that has a full spectrum. Full spectrum does not mean that there's THC in there. Full spectrum means that it's the components that were within the plant before it was processed are still within the natural ratios that they would be there based upon the processing itself. So use processes that work. I mean, we use ethanol extraction because ethanol is ancient and it works and it's good. And you know, I remember when I first started this, everybody was moving towards CO2 because it was easier. And they thought, well, it has to still be run through a rotovap through ethanol at the end anyway. So all you're really doing is adding a $150,000 piece of equipment that will destroy the plant and then put it back together again. So I think the reason that a lot of people fail with CBD products is because they are either these isolates. And so, and they do need to have an entourage effect. They do need to have more to them. And I don't really trust a lot of the labeling. You know, you ask to see COAs, ask to see the lab results, see if they're FDA approved, all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Tying into that, right? You know, thinking as a retail investor, right, for a second. Imagine I'm a retail investor. I'm not particularly familiar with cannabis science, right? But I want to decide what's a good investment for me. What company is good? What company isn't? What company will be around when the dust settles, right? What are some of the indicators that one has to look for, you know, to find what a good company is from your side, right? In terms of product quality, in terms of quality assurance, in terms of safety, right? What can an investor look for? Where do you find some of that information?
You know, that's an excellent question. The first thing that I always look at is who's the manufacturer. Are they just white labeling somebody else's formulation so that they can go out into the market? Are they co-packing where they're actually creating a formulation that they're having somebody else make for them under their IP and their guidance? Look at who the company is. Is it made up of a bunch of investors and marketing people? Or, you know, from the CPG world, or is there anyone in there that knows a stick about science and anything about healthcare and pharmaceuticals and things like that? So you really need to look at the makeup of a company to decide whether they have any chops in it or whether they're like, wow, we're just going to jump on the CBD bandwagon and, you know, put all of our money into marketing and sales team and affiliates and all that. So that's the first thing I would say is looking at that. I mean, who manufactures it and who's on their team?
Mara, don't drop your computer, but if you had a mic to drop, I would love for that to happen right now. you're throwing some knowledge at us today. We are, unfortunately, just so much unfortunately, running out of time. Can people reach out to you? And do you want to tell us a little bit about, just in a quick like minute summary, of where Aunt Zelda specifically is going this year?
Right. I'd love to. So I've kind of gotten fed up with the U.S. in the way that this cannabis being rolled out here. In fact, I'm moving on Saturday to Mexico.
Wow.
Mexico.
I got Spanish now. So, but I mean, like right now I'm licensed by a company called Psilocybin. It's in South Africa. Gabriel Theron is fantastic. He's my partnership there. He's licensed Aunt Zelda's for manufacturing for export. We're already gonna be exporting into Brazil, and looks like we'll be into the UK here before long. I've been spending all of my COVID time working on my software platform. I do want to say it's called Octopi Wellness, octopiwellness.com. If any medical professionals or anybody that you know of, pre-sign up. We'll be releasing it to the next 100 doctors after Q1. So nice. I'm very excited about that. And you know what? And there are, I still get approached a lot about licensing Aunt Zelda's in other states. And I would love to do that, but it would have to be a license agreement, not me having somebody manufacture. And, you know, I mean, I'm more interested in the data. The data is my thing, and understanding dosing. And I think I've kind of got that dialed, how to get us there.
Great. Thank you so much, Mara. Unfortunately, we do have to call it there, but AuntZeldas.org.com? Org.
Yeah.
And Zelda's dot.
Are you raising? How can people support you? I mean, are you raising for the platform?
Yeah, we're going to be raising for the platform after this 2.0 is released. So yes, stay tuned. Yes.
How do you reach you for that?
Absolutely. I will definitely come talk to you.
Great.
What's the best way to reach you? Like people who are interested in investing in this?
Just you can reach me at mara@auntzeldas.org. I mean, they all end up going into the same pile.
I understand that for sure. Mara, thank you so much again. We're so happy you've been here with us. So much knowledge. Can't wait to have you back. And I hope your move is successful and easy.
I appreciate it. All right. Thank you for having me. Bye-bye.
Bye. Ooh, Javi, we had some knowledge dropped on us today, my friend. It was a fabulous show.
I always feel we're short with every interviewee.
I know.
You need to make the show longer.
Well, I mean, investors, once you see this, drop a one if you want maybe a 4-hour show, or a 2 if you want an 8-hour show. You know, just let us know which one you want, because obviously those are the choices. But I tend to agree, you know, everybody has more knowledge than a 15-minute segment can provide, but regardless, we're super grateful to our guests for being here. Again, we are working out these technical issues that have plagued us early on this year, but ideally we will see everybody next week at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, ideally. Otherwise, this bottle of bourbon may be empty. I brought it to make a joke, but then we didn't go live today. So awesome.
We'll save him.
Javi, thanks for joining me today, man. Always good to see you.
Till next time.
All right. Later, everybody.
Progressive Snapshot can save you money based on how you drive and how much you drive. So the safer you drive, the more money you could save. Now, if you didn't hear that because you were yelling at another car while driving, let me say it again.
You need to calm down.
Yelling is just making everyone as stressed out as you are and letting them all know that you definitely aren't trying to save with Progressive Snapshot. And if you did hear it the first time because you weren't yelling at another car, nice work. You'd love Snapshot from Progressive because it rewards safe drivers. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Snapshot not available in California and North Carolina or from all agents.
When your life depends on it, when everything is on the line, you've got to get real about addiction treatment. Only Caron offers 65 years of medical expertise in evidence-based treatment with real proven results. A recent independent study showed that 94% of Karen patients were still in recovery 90 days post-treatment. So if you're ready for something real, visit caron.org/real today. Karen. Real results. Real care. Real about recovery.